to Torah Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Lachem Aleph, Perek Yud Gimel, Chapter 13. Perek Yud Bet ended with Yerubbaam ascending the Mizbeach he had built in Beit El to bring the Ketoret in front of the golden calves. This was the day of the Chanukat HaMizbeach, of dedicating this new type of worship. Perek 13 begins right at that point, with the arrival of a new character. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Vihine Ish Elokim Bam Yehuda, a man of God, comes from Malchut Yehuda in the south, Bidvar Hashem, with the carrying a message of God, El Beit El via Ravam, El Beit El, to the city of Beit El. Via Ravam, Omeid Al HaMizbeach Lahaktir, and Yeravam is standing there on the Mizbeach, ready to bring the Ketoret. Dot Mikra points out that the word Vihine, as an introduction to some, is an introduction to something surprising. No one was expecting any interference with Yerubbaam's plan. Apparently, no one had stood up against him as he slowly erased and reformed their religious rituals and ideals. And suddenly, here is an opponent who's traveled all the way from Yehuda to criticize Yerubbaam. He addresses himself not to Yerubbaam himself, but to the Mizbeach, almost as if Yerubbaam is not important, and it is the Mizbeach itself that would not want to be used for what it is being used for. Pasuk Bet. Vayikra al Mizbeach b'dvar Hashem. He turns to the Mizbeach and he calls out in the word of Hashem, Vayomer, Mizbeach, Mizbeach, altar, altar, Koamar Hashem, Hinei ben nolad lebeit David. There's going to be a child born to the house of David, Yoshio Shmo. His name is Yoshio. V'zavach alecha et kohanei habamot hamaktirim alecha. Vatzamot adam yisrafu alecha. This person, Yoshio, is going to sacrifice on you the bones of the priests who are bringing this ketoret and bringing korbanot on you, and all of their bones are going to be burnt upon you on the Mizbeach. And then he goes on, and he says, V'natan bayom hahu mofet. And he says, and now here I am going to give you a sign, lemor, zeh mofet asher diber Hashem, and this is the sign that Hashem says, hinei hamizbeach nekra. The Mizbeach is going to be broken, and it's going to split in half, and all of the ashes of the Mizbeach are going to pour out. This miracle that this Ish Elokim announces is also a sign. The Mizbeach itself is broken and shattered. This way of serving Hashem is broken. It's not right. It's not real. And the Ish Elokim uses the word nikra, which actually means torn, not broken. And the Dot Mikra points out that this is a hint to Yerubbaam's anointment that happened with the tearing of a cloak and using the same language of Nikra. The message to Yerubbaam is that his anointment is revoked and despised. Only a full tshuva and change of course can help him. And it is possible that he can do that tshuva now because he's getting a Navi who's coming, and the Navi actually offers him a miracle. He says, here's what I want you to know. The Mizbeach is going to get destroyed. There's going to be a person who's going to come from Yehuda, destroy the Mizbeach. We know that that actually does happen. And then he gives them a miracle. I'm proving to you that I'm right. Everyone always asks, why doesn't the Navi give us a miracle? And here is a Navi who gives a miracle. Instead of being stunned into tshuva, Yerubbaam is furious. Verse 4, Vehi kishmo hamelcha divrei ish Elokim. When Yerubbaam hears these words, Vayishlach Yerubbaam et yado, may al Mizbeach, he sends out his hands, lemor tifsuhu, grab him. He turns to the people around him and he says, get him. Instead of listening to him, Yerubbaam tries to dominate him. And then what happens? Bativash yado, his hand freezes. It dries up. Asher shalach alav, the one that he had sent out against him, v'lo yachol lahashiva alav, he can't even put his hand down. And then the sign that the Ish Elokim said would happen, it happens. V'hamizbeach nikra, and the altar splits open. There's that word nikra again. V'yishvoch hadeshen min hamizbeach kemofet asher natan Ish Elokim b'dvar Hashem, just like the prophet had said that it would. This degradation of Yerubbaam just continues. Not only is his Mizbeach broken, but he's standing there with a frozen body. His act of dominance, which is pointing his finger at the man of God to tell his servants to go grab him, actually turns against him. And then in a next step of humiliation, Yerubbaam is forced to ask the Ish Elokim to daven to Hashem on his behalf that he can be healed. He begs him politely, Chel na. He Chalna et pnei Hashem lokecha v'hitpalel ba'adi. Please beg Hashem and daven on my behalf that my hand should go back to normal. And he even has to use that word, na, please. And the Isha Elokim does, and Yeravam's hand returns to normal. Humiliated, Yeravam has another option, another time to do teshuva. But instead, he chooses a different tactic. He invites the man to his house to eat a meal. This seems to be on the surface a show of thankfulness, but actually it's another way, a different and more circuitous way to dominate the Navi. We're equals. You help me, I'll help you. Let me be your benefactor. Let me gift you. Let me pay you. You can almost be on my staff. This tactic doesn't work either. As the man of God announces, you could give me half your household and I wouldn't come with you. I won't eat bread. I won't even take a drink in this place. Verse 9. V'dvar Hashem, I have a commandment from Hashem, l'mor, lo tochal lechem, v'lo tishtamayim, v'lo tashuv, v'derech asher halachta. You're not allowed to eat bread, you're not allowed to drink water, and you can't even go back in the way that you came. Hashem's message to the Navi was that when this would happen, and clearly this was anticipated, that Yeravam would try this tactic, was not to ingratiate himself into the kingdom at all, not to eat, not to drink, and not even to walk back on the same path that he came. Rashi and others comment that this indicates the status of the city of Beit El as a city of idolatry, which you can't enjoy at all, and you can't even enter the city unless you're trying to get them to change, which clearly here the Isha Elokim was. But the Isha Elokim doesn't want to even get used to the scenery. He's not going to go back in the way he came because he's never coming back again. He doesn't need to know the path. And with this, he leaves and he goes back to Yehuda. But it doesn't go so smoothly. A Navi from Beit El hears what happens from his son. This man is called Navi Achad Zakein. And clearly, from the way that the story turns out, this person is a Navi Sheker, as the word Navi is actually a prophet. It's a generic word, and we see in Tanakh that sometimes it refers to a true Navi, and sometimes it refers to a false Navi. It's for this reason that the other Navi, the real one in the story, is called an Isha Elokim. And that word is only really used for somebody who's true. The Navi, this man, this Ish, Navi Zakein, we're going to call him so it doesn't get so confusing, the old prophet, quickly saddles a donkey and catches up with the Isha Elokim. After he identifies that's the right person, he too invites him in for a meal. The Isha Elokim responds in the same way he responded before. Hashem has told him that he may not. But now things change in verse 18. Vayomer lo, Gamani Navi Kamocha. I'm also a prophet. Umalach tiber elai v'dvar Hashem lemor hashivu itcha el beitecha v'yochal lechem v'yishmaim. He says, I'm also a Navi, and I got a prophecy that you should come and eat at my house. And the pasuk inserts kechashlo, but he lied to him. It wasn't true. Anyway, this tactic works. And the Isha Elokim says, okay, there must be another prophecy. And he goes with him and he eats. And as they are eating, in verse 20, Vehim Yoshvim al Shulchan, then there's this pause in the middle of the Pasuk, which is really unusual. There's a pay in the middle of the Pasuk. And then, Vahidvar Hashem, El Anavi Asher Heshivo, Hashem actually speaks to this Ish Zakein. He gets a nevuah, which is very unexpected. And the pause seems to be just to highlight this unexpected thing that's happening. He now turns in prophecy to the Isha Elokim from Yehuda, and he says, you rebelled against Hashem. You didn't keep what I told you to keep. You didn't do what I told you to do. You went and you ate bread. I told you one thing. And you said it to Yeravam, and you said it to the Isha Elokim. You said you're not allowed, and then you went and you did it, and you ate bread and you drank water. Therefore, lo tavo nivlatcha el kerev avotecha, your body will not be buried in your family grave, meaning you are not going to make it back to Yehuda. After the meal, the Navi saddles the donkey for the Isha Elokim. You can imagine they're both really nervous what's going to happen next, and he sends him on his way. A short while later, he is attacked by a lion who kills him instantly. But the lion doesn't touch his body or the donkey, which clearly it's a miraculous death. And the donkey stands next to his body, almost guarding it. And the lion also stands there, almost guarding the donkey and the body. People see what happened, and it's very jarring. It's miraculous. And word gets back to the Navi Zaken. He sees that the prophecy was fulfilled, and he goes out to find the Ish Elokim. He finds him just as it was described, dead on the road with the lion and the donkey watching over him. The Navi Zaken picks up the body, brings him back to Beit El, to his city, and he buries him there, eulogizing him with the words, Hoi Achi, whoa, my brother, feeling this brotherliness with the Ish Elokim, because now they really actually are both Nevi'im. I mean, when he said it before, it wasn't true, but now he has already gotten Nevuah. He turns to his son and he tells them when he dies, he wants to be buried next to this man. Why? Pasuk Lamed Bet. Ki haya yihyeh hadavar asher kara b'dvar Hashem al hamizbeach asher b'beit el v'al kol batei abamot asher barei shamron. He says, because I believe him in the prophecy that he gave Yeravam of this terrible thing that's going to happen both to this mizbeach and all of the bamot, all these external altars that we're building. And all the bones actually are of the priests and imagine and assumably his are going to be burnt on that Mizbeach. And maybe I can save myself by being buried with this Ish Elokim. This actually ends up being a good plan, because when Yoshio comes and does exactly what this Ish Elokim said he would and he destroys the Mizbeach and Beit El in Melachim Bet, Perkaf Gimel, chapter 23, the Psukim detail that they did find this grave. And Yoshio said, whose grave is it? And they said, this is the grave of the Ish Elokim who came from Yudah. And he said, leave it alone, don't touch it. After this strange story, the parak ends with two more psukim. Verse 33, after all of these things, lo shav Yeravam midarko hara'ah. Yeravam did not change. He didn't turn from his evil path. Vayashav, vayas miktsot ha'am kohanei bamot hachaf. And he made a certain portion of the nation into kohanim for these altars. Hachafetz yimaleet yado. And he, whoever wanted to, he would yimaleet yado. Basically, he would pay him. Vayhi kohanei bamot. And they would be priests of these altars. Vayhi. But Dvar Hazel Chatat be Yeravam. This became a sin for the house of Yeravam. Lachid Lashmid Me'al Pnei Hadama. And it was going to end up cutting it off and destroying the house of Yeravam from the face of the earth. This is really a strange parak, and it needs some explanation. We understand the need for a prophet to Yeravam, but why one for Yehuda? And why the repetition of the command from Hashem not to eat bread that we hear over and over? And actually the word bread is really a milah hamancha. It's a repeated word in this parak. It comes up many times. And also, what's the meaning of this second story, the one about the Navi Zaken? So in the last parak, we spoke about what the structure of these two kingdoms was supposed to be. Separate politically, but joined religiously. Three times a year, they would join together at the Beit HaMikdash. And this would cause both kingdoms to act righteously. The kingdom of Yehuda was already diminished. They weren't going to be able to be a national power. They don't have the good land. The good land was in the north in Shomron. They only have one Shevet. They don't have the trade routes. Malchut Yisrael basically got all the good things from the country. All of the economic power went to Malchut Yisrael. So Malchut Yudah, they have the Beit HaMikdash, and they have a possibility to continue like that. Malchut Yisrael, they got the economic power. But they had to go to Yehuda. There had to be a certain sense of humility that we have the economic power, but we understand that it comes from Hashem. Yeravam erased this possibility. First, he got rid of Kedushat HaMakom, of the holiness of place, by saying, we could really worship Hashem here. We could worship Hashem through these Agalim. We don't need the Beit HaMikdash. Then he got rid of Kedushat HaAdam. He got rid of Kohanim. Anyone who wants can be a Kohen. And it says, it emphasizes in the last pasuk that, you want to get, it's a good job. You want to get paid? Great, be a Kohen. Really reminds us of the story of Pesel Micha at the end of Shoftim. Now, the two countries no longer share the same holy place and they no longer share the same holy people. Then he gets rid of Kedushat HaZman, the holiness of time. They don't even share the same holiday. Sure, we'll keep the holiday of Sukkot, but a month later. So, it's not going to coincide anymore. In Tanakh, in the political structure, there are two checks on a king. One is the Kohen. The king is not in charge of the religion. Even Shlomo could not bring his own korbanot after he himself built the Beit HaMikdash. And Yeravam gets rid of this. He erases it because he owns the Kohanim. He pays them. And the other is the Navi who speaks truth to power. The Navi here needs to come from Yehuda. First of all, because it's very possible that Yeravam had kind of eradicated the Nevi'im of the north by paying them. But even if not, the Navi who comes from Yehuda represents a rebuke from Malchut Yehuda, what it was supposed to represent. It's the rebuke of the Beit HaMikdash coming to haunt Yeravam. You can't actually control the religion, says the prophet from Yehuda. You can try, but you can't actually control it. And after degrading Yeravam with the miracle, with the freezing hand, and then with the healing, Yeravam needs to gain control, not only over this Navi, but over the religion. Otherwise, his structure will come crashing down. So he offers the Navi food. Let me support you. You can be one of my people. And he's the first to propose that this will become what we see the role of the Navi Sheker in the whole Sefer Melachim. They become mouthpieces of the king. Whatever the king wants them to say, that's what they say. They just say that it's from God. But everyone understands that what's God and what's the king? There's no boundary anymore. We're going to see this with Achav, with Achav. We're going to see it with Yehoyakim. We're going to see it with Tzidkiyahu and others. And a similar story actually plays out with Amos, another Navi who comes from Yehuda to give prophecy in Yisrael. We're going to see all this later on. The Navi Zakein is clearly one of the prophets who work for the king, as it explained in an article by Neely Samet. He lives in Beit El and owns a burial plot there. It's in his best interest to continue Yeravam's system of the king supporting the prophets and the prophets supporting the king, not checking the king. So he rushes to bring this real Navi down by offering him food and drink so that he could be beholden to the country Israel. The crux of the story, though, is that this false prophet changes. Even after Yeravam sees the Mizbeach break open, even after his own hand freezes and unfreezes, even after the miraculous death and burial of the Isha Zakim that really makes an impact on the false prophet, Yeravam doesn't change his evil ways. The Gemara comments on this verse and says, what does it mean, achar hadavar ha'ila, after these things? We're reading here from the end of Perek Yud Gimel. The Gemara says, you know what happened? My achar, what after? Amar Rabbi Ava, achar shetafso HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yeravam bibigdo, Hashem grabbed Yeravam by his cloak, va'amar lo, chazor b'cha, do tshuva, va'ani, va'ata, Ben Yishai, Netayel b'Gan Eden, you and me and the son of Yishai, meaning Malchut Yehuda, the three of us can walk in Gan Eden. We can have a good relationship between these two countries. These two countries can be symbiotic. They can serve God together. We can have a new political structure that will actually be the best for Bnei Israel. We can get back to this wonderful place. Amarlo, Yeravam turns to Hashem and he says to him, Mi Barosh, okay, but who's in front? Hashem responds to him, Ben Yishai Barosh. The son of David is in front, and you're second. Ihachi, says Yeravam, if so, lo ba'ina, I'm not coming. And what's so ironic about this Gemara is that when they're listed earlier, Yeravam is actually listed first. Ani ata uben Yishai, you and the son of David. So actually, when Hashem lists it, he says, me and you, Yeravam, and the son of David. But if you're asking the question already, you have a problem with your ego, fine, you'll be last. And Yeravam shows that he really does. And he says, you know, if I can't be in front, if I can't be the leader, I don't want anything. Yeravam, who once stood up for the people, who actually cared about them, is corrupted so quickly by the power of the king. His first act is to change the religion to one that he controls and erase anyone else's power who could oppose him. The legacy of David is that one who listens to Nevi'im will be successful. One who humbles himself before God, that is the king's greatest strength. Yeravam makes none of these good decisions and therefore will never rise to the potential that he had for greatness. Thank you for signing together. Li'ilay Nishmat Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.